So those, so will be two panels. I think.
Okay.
Their suggestion is just doing the two. Okay. Each, all six will have their separate PowerPoint presentations.
Okay, and Nathan's all set.
Yeah, we're good to go.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for being here on this fine Wednesday, May 20th, 2015, in the House Transportation and Economic Development Committee. Committee members, welcome. We are going to have first on our agenda today an informational hearing, and I thank you all for being here to talk to us about a topic that those of us who are interested in transportation care about. I'd like to call up our first panel for our Oregon's aviation industry panel, Mitch Zwecker, Vince Granato, and Mr. Tremaine, please. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here today. And in any order that you choose, please.
Okay. Chair McEwen, members of the committee, my name is Mitch Zwecker. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Aviation. I'll kick it off and then hand it off to Vince Granato from Port of Portland, and then to Ron Tremaine, who's going to represent the UAS industry from in situ, with a corporation out in the Hood River area.
We love the new carpet, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Did you have your picture taken with the new carpet?
Well, I saw a very small piece in the speaker's office. I want to find out where that came from.
Ah, okay.
So, Chair McEwen and members of the committee, what I will do is just kind of give you an overview of the Oregon Department of Aviation and the system of aviation in the state. So I'll start by just pointing out that there's a lot of stakeholders in the state, including the commercial air service industry, which is represented here by both Vince Granato and Catherine Stevens. You have airport owners and sponsors. Catherine Stevens is going to represent an organization called OAMA, Oregon Airport Managers Association. Pilots and aircraft, represented by the president of the Oregon Pilots Association, that's Mary Rosenblum back over here. And then the aviation industry, which is a cluster group here, and that's Jake Jacobs, who's the executive director of the Oregon Aviation Industry Cluster. And then you have a number of federal government and other things, and then we also have the UAS industry as well, and Ron Tremaine will represent them. So we also have regulatory groups, the FAA, the governor and legislature, policy and execution, and funding, and then local governments, law enforcement agencies, all have a stake in the aviation system in the state. And then other state agencies. We work with the Department of Forestry and Fish and Wildlife and some of the other state agencies as well on aviation-related issues. And then I'm sure there are others, and then not to forget the citizens of Oregon, who all have a stakeholder, whether they're pilots or are affected by airports and aviation themselves. So this is a kind of another list of stakeholders, and we call these the alphabet groups. These
Goodness.
Are all of the different groups, some of which I've already mentioned. But AOPA is a national-level organization. AAAE is an accreditation group that actually accredits airport managers and a number of people. It's a desirable trait to have an airport manager who's got that skill and been certified by the AAAE. Experimental Aircraft Association has worked with us in the state on residential through the fence issues on behalf of Oregon. NBAA, National Business Aviation Association, and then an organization that represents all of the state directors, which is the National Association of State Airport Officials, and we're trying to get them to have a conference here in Oregon in 2018. They're looking at us. We bring in all 50 states worth of my counterparts. And then SOAR, which is Unmanned Aerial Systems Consortium, and their board of directors, and we actually have their executive director here today. And Chuck, if you just raise your hand.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
And then AUVSI, which is the national association associated with unmanned aerial systems. And then other stakeholders, of course, are the citizens, cities, counties, and ports. We work with them regularly. And then state and local agencies and chambers of commerce, because economic development is a key tenet of aviation. And then we work with an aviation system plan, and I brought this here for your reading enjoyment if you ever wanted to read it. This is last updated in 2007, and it's see the chapters that it's organized under there. Most recently, we just got funded by the FAA to update Chapter 8, which is the economic impact of aviation in the state. And we actually have a report that I would be more than happy to provide to you on the economic impact of aviation.
If you wouldn't mind sharing that, we'll pass it out to the group. We can put it up on OLIS. Thank you.
And then our airports are part of what's called the National Plan of Integrated Airport System, the NIPIAS, in the state based on the interest of national level airports throughout the country and funded by the FAA. And then we have good news, and that is that the FAA has agreed to fund a complete revision of the aviation plan in the next couple of years. We've already started, like I said, by doing Chapter 8, and then we're going to do Chapters 2 through 4 in the next year, but we'll probably update the entire book in the next couple of years.
Mr. Swicker, when you say public use airports, what does that mean?
So for public use airports in the state of Oregon, there's 97, of which 28 are owned by the state. There's about 57 of them that are in the NIPIAS, the National Plan of Integrated Airports, meaning they're eligible for funding by the FAA. Not all of them take that funding. They're broken down into different categories. There's a primary airport, which is the ones that have commercial air service, and then there's what they call non-primary airports of those NIPIAS airports that are funded at a different level that are called, well, it's NPE, non-primary entitlements, that they get a certain amount of grant money every year.
Manager.
Vice Chair Gorsuch, so, do you mind if we interrupt as we go? This may generate a lot of questions.
Chair McEwen, not at all.
Thank you.
In terms of Salem's airport, which has had service commercial and then doesn't have service, do you get downgraded then, or do you stay at that primary designation?
Chair McEwen, Representative Gorsuch, they will maintain their accreditation and certification, and Vince may have a better answer on this than I do, for a certain period of time until it's clear that they're not going to retain a certain level of emplanements.
Okay.
And then they would be downgraded to that non-primary entitlement.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yes. Okay, I mentioned the system of airports. This kind of gives you a rough idea. The state owns or operates 28 of them, 12 of which are in the NIPIAS. And I've got a list of those as well. Up until recently, we had 7 air carrier airports. Klamath Falls, you may be aware, has lost their commercial air service not too long ago, and there's some work being done to try to regain that commercial air service through the city and county and some state legislators as well. There are also 360 private use airports, and then we register as an agency 4,000 pilots and about 4,000 plus aircraft.
Mr. Swicker, yes, Representative Wagner.
So help me understand, 28 state-sponsored, so why are they state-sponsored versus, I'm trying to understand the difference here.
So just Chair McEwen, Representative Lively, those airports are some that have been in the system as long ago, they started building the system here back in 1921.
Okay.
The Board of Aeronautics, one of the oldest aviation agencies in the country, started building a system of airports back then. Mm-hmm. That's what we have now, is what's left of that. It used to be more than 28 that we own.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, 28 of them are federally funded, and the remainder are what they call non-NIPIAS, not federally funded.
Mr. Swicker, so I'm seeing Joseph State Airport and Mackenzie Bridge State Airport. I've actually seen both of those. I also know where there are people who land planes in fairly remote areas that I would call a landing strip. How does that fit? That doesn't count in any of this. Those are privately owned pieces of ground where people just fly in. How does that fit with this?
Well, Chair McEwen, that might be...
Agnes is an example.
Which one?
Agnes.
Agnes. That's probably a private airstrip. They register with us on an annual basis, and it has to do with their right to exist. If they demonstrate that they have certain criteria, they meet certain criteria, they can't be done away with, so to speak, without some due process.
So there is a registry of some sort for these kind of remote...
We keep an annual registry, and it's about 370, and then we'll do an inspection if anybody wants a new airport in the state. Our agency, with FAA-trained staff, will do an inspection to make sure it's safe to have an airport in that location, and then work with the county, which is a land use owner, so to speak, and the FAA to make sure that both of them are in agreement that there should be an airport there.
Okay, thank you.
Mission of the agency right here, safe operation, economic growth, infrastructure improvement of aviation airports in the state. As I said, we've been an agency for quite some time. 1921 predates the FAA.
Wow.
And then you can see some of the other things that we do. We assist and aid and provide expertise if you have questions on aviation-related issues here in the legislature. Everything we do is based in statute. Mm-hmm. So I've put some of our business lines that we do in the statute that relates to it, and this is available to you as well. And then I would point out that we are a completely other-funded agency. We don't take any general funds. We don't take any lottery funds. All our funding comes from fuel tax, leases, access fees, fuel flowage, and sales. We have three airports where we actually sell fuel, where private enterprise has walked away from those airports, and we've picked up the ability to sell the fuel as a convenience to the pilots. I would prefer that we make them available to private operators, but we operate for the benefit of the airport constituency and pilot community. We have an aviation board, 7-member board appointed by the governor, established in 1921. Back then, they certified aircraft and licensed pilots, things that the FAA does today. And they built the system of airports in the state, or helped build it. And this is the statutory requirements, 1 member each of the Cascades, no more than 4 members of the same political party, represent both private and public sector, 2 terms max. We actually have 2 different board members going off the board. Recently confirmed city manager of McMinnville, Martha Meeker, retired Air Force general, as our newest board member to replace one of the ones that retired this year. And then the Aviation Board serves as the modal committee for Connect Oregon. And we work, of course, with the governor's office, transportation, Carmen Forrest is our advisor. And then we will respond to any request for information, assistance requested, issues based by anybody that asks for our help, the legislature included.
Thank you.
Board issues, I mentioned a 2 turnover here, Nan Garnick, who is from Redmond. And we are looking for a replacement for Larry Dalrymple from Eastern Oregon this year. So we are recruiting actively for an additional board member from Eastern Oregon. And then we have a fee bill in, pilot registration, aircraft registration, and airport registration that's been through both houses and on to full house, I think, for a third reading tomorrow.
Oh, perfect timing.
And then one of the challenges for our aviation board is, what do we want the system of airports to look like in the next 2 years, in the next 5 years, in the next 10 years, next 20 years? And that's something we have to wrestle with as a state, and we welcome any input, and we'll be looking at a kind of a panel with our aviation board to try to figure that out.
Representative Lyman.
So I assume part of that conversation is, I'm still thinking about it, and I grew up in northeastern Oregon, so I'm very familiar with Joseph and some of the other, but I assume then part of that conversation about that has to do with the interrelationship for emergencies. There's all kinds of other uses for these airports other than the fact that somebody can land a private plane there that's from the state interest versus, because again, it just appears to me there's a lot of small airports, private fields and things, but there must be some strategic use for all of that. Otherwise, we're just going to have, it could just be anywhere.
And Chair McEwen, Representative Lively, that's true. And that's one of the things is in this book, there are specific roles for different airports. And some of it, they're categorized from the highest level commercial air service, metro regions, down to the remote access where the reason for their existence might be emergency landings. It okay. might be firefighting, and we do a lot of firefighting at state-owned airports or state-operated airports. Last year, at one time, we had 6 airports that are owned by the state that were used for helicopter firefighting.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
And this is the location of those 28 airports.
Just to give you an idea. Mr. Schroeder, can we go back one? I just at the very end of that, so it sparked with me. It says bringing new pilots into the system as a role and a mission. Do we have a declining number or an increasing number?
Chair McEwen, The general aviation community, and you may hear more about this from Mary Rosenblum and even some of the others, is a kind of an aging out of the flying population. It's an expensive, at times, occupation. Owning an aircraft, getting annual inspections, the cost of fuel, all those things, and the time to train is something that makes it so that you don't see as many young folks coming into the pilot community. So that's one of the challenges, is to keep aviation alive and well. And we see this as a function of fuel sales. So, for example, avgas. We see a graph over multiple years where the sales of avgas is going like this. And then for jet fuel, there's more corporate aircraft, commercial air service. In the recession around 2009, it tapered off, but it leveled off, and it's sort of sliding back up again, and I'm sure you'll hear more from Vince about that.
Thank you.
Those are the airports. I wanted to talk a little bit about the benefits of FAA funding, and so I'll show you this. This primary line right here runs roughly over five years, and it gives you an idea of what comes into the state in terms of FAA funding. And it's fairly substantial over a five-year period. And then you look at the general aviation airports, they're not insubstantial, but it's about a third of what goes to the primary and the what they call reliever airports. And then we have system planning grants that we get from the FAA as well. And then this is the next 5 years, what it looks like. And this is only the non-primary entitlement airports. It does not include the primary airports, where we don't have quite as much access to their thing. They work through the FAA directly. We work through a program for the non-primary airports through a program coordinated by the FAA called the Statewide Capital Improvements Program, where we look 5 years out and coordinate with both the airports and the FAA for the benefit of Oregon on how airports rack and stack for funding and make sure that they're legitimate projects and that sort of thing.
So the FAA only funds capital, or do they fund operations also?
Only capital.
Only capital.
Chair McEwen, Representative Lively, only capital. So, but if you look out here, it's in the next 5 years, it's going to be about $139 million from the FAA, which requires a 10% grant match, all FAA grants, 10% grant match. That has to be provided by the sponsors. So there's another $21 million that local communities will have to put into the airports to get that 90% return, that 90% funding from the FAA.
Thanks.
This is Connect Oregon. I thought it would be an interesting look at how aviation has benefited from Connect Oregon. First 3 years when it was, well, my laser pointer's going, when it was a $100 million program, we got roughly 25%. And then if you look at Connect Oregon Rural Airports in the green right there, that's under Connect Oregon 3, there was a $5 million set aside to leverage that $95 million. At the time, the grant match was 5%. It leveraged the 95%. We only were able to use about $4 million of it because of some timing issues with the Connect Oregon time process and the FAA's grant timeline. So that's something we can maybe look at future Connect Oregon programs.
Mr. Zwicker, I'd be very interested if you have suggestions as to how we can deal with that. It came up as a topic of conversation the other day in a meeting I was in, that we have a timing problem. How far off are we? And obviously it's having a negative impact on what you're trying to do.
It depends. And one of the things, Chair McKeown, I think one of the things we probably need to look at is making sure we don't hurt other modes in the process of helping aviation. But maybe it might be worth a small working group with ODOT, because as I understand it now, it's not in statute or in rule. It's just a matter of policy for when the grant applications take place. Mm-hmm. So trying to time it with cities and counties and their budget processing and the FAA with their timelines and Connect Oregon with their timelines to make it optimized for the most number of applicants, I think, is an area we could work on.
Okay. Thank you.
So I wanted to show you one slide here. Oh, my pointer's back. One slide that talks about the overmatch, benefit of the 90% funding from the FAA. A lot of local communities don't depend on Connect Oregon for the entirety of the grant. They depend on it for the 10% grant match. So if you look at the leverage dollars, the overmatch, it's about 61% of all of Connect Oregon of any mode. And if you count it here and down here for rural airports, that particular part, 61% of all overmatch, and that's a lot of dollars to leverage for rural parts of the state. And subject to any questions, that's my portion here. I apologize for taking too much time.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, sir.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair McEwen, members of the committee. Thanks very much for the opportunity to talk about PDX and the Port of Portland and a little bit of what our role is here. I am Vince Granato. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for the Port of Portland, and my office is at the airport, 7200 Northeast Airport Way. And so I've been out there for almost 28 years now and have seen a lot of changes. So I'll talk a little bit about the Port of Portland, and you may have seen this this photo here that describes what how the port operates, and you can see at the confluence there of the Willamette and the Columbia Rivers, and most of our facilities are right along there. The three airports that I'll be talking about are PDX, but also we do operate Hillsborough and Troutdale as well. And so I'll go through each of those airports and some of the significant issues that are going on at each of them. We do have an aviation mission, and the important part here is that it's not just passengers. We're also focused on the cargo mission, and so we're moving goods and people. The difference here is that people really care where they get off of an airplane. Boxes don't necessarily, and so it's a slightly different mission. So the markets are slightly different, but we're obviously very focused on both sides because we know it's part of our role here from the overall perspective of the port of moving goods and, as well. And again, our job is to make sure we're getting people to the markets that they want to go to, regional, national, and international. PDX is really the crown jewel of the system, and again, we've been growing substantially at PDX, almost 16 million passengers last year, a record high, and we're seeing significant growth this year as well, probably in the neighborhood of 3.5%, which is much more than the national average. Last year, we moved from the largest of the medium hub airports, as the FAA categorizes us, to the smallest of the large hub airports. So we are now a large hub airport. That doesn't really do anything for us.
It sounds really good, though. Yeah.
We're now a large hub airport, so we're very excited about that. We have 14 passenger airlines and 8 cargo operators that are at PDX. The interesting thing to note about operations, and an operation is considered a takeoff and a landing. PDX is not actually the busiest airport in the state, and that is Hillsborough, because you count operations based on takeoffs and landings, and I'll talk about Hillsborough a little bit more. And what you've been seeing at PDX is larger aircraft and more people on them. And for those of you, I'm sure, who've flown, you've seen there are not a lot of vacant seats. Our load factor last year was 84%. Mm-hmm. The summer is expected to be 88%.
Wow.
And so that's the airline model these days. Upsize the aircraft, get more people on them, generate more revenue within the same infrastructure. So that's certainly what we're seeing. And so our total operations are actually down 30% from 10 years ago. And so that's an interesting dynamic. And if you recall, in the past, there have been discussions about a third runway. That is not in our foreseeable future. It's been taken off of the master plan. So so for us, we're just managing within the existing footprint that we have. It's obviously a large employment generator. There are 10,000 people that work out at the airport at any given point in time, and obviously has substantial tax revenue and benefits to the economy. One of the things we're quite proud of is that we are America's best airport. I should have worn my lanyard today. I didn't. And we have been named Travel and Leisure's best U.S. airport the last 2 years, and I have a sneaking suspicion that will continue again this year. And Condé Nast, the same thing. We won it 4 out of 5 years there, and they stopped actually the category because we always won. and the reality is, having been out there for as long as I have, there is a culture of customer service, mm-hmm. And pride in that airport. And it starts certainly with the airlines, the concessions. We have, in my opinion, the best TSA in the nation, and you don't always hear that. Mm-hmm. And everybody really banding together to make that airport the great place that it is. And certainly you have seen some of that, Chair McEwen, with your comments about the carpet. It's been an astonishing phenomenon that we were even surprised at, but it really gets to the love that people have of the airport, and it's something that we take very seriously.
Rightfully so.
So for our destinations, our top 40, we have 52 destinations right now. You can get to anywhere in our top 40. The one that we're still chasing is Florida, and it's a leisure market. It's not always a high yield for the airlines, but overall, we have great connectivity across the United States. Internationally, today's a very exciting day. We have the inaugural of the Iceland Air. They're probably departing just about now. So nonstop service to Reykjavik and with Iceland Air. We have a nonstop service to Frankfurt starting in June on Condor. We started a nonstop service to Volaris, to Guadalajara, in the last year. And so we also, of course, have our Delta flights to Amsterdam and Tokyo. We're the smallest U.S. airport that has nonstop service to both Asia and Europe. And it is a challenge for us to maintain that, just given the size of our market and our demographics. We're very fortunate to have great partners like Nike, Intel, and others in the International Air Service Committee who understand the value of that air service.
Vice Chair Gorsuch, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is that what the problem was with the loss of Lufthansa? Because Lufthansa, for a number of years, operated out of PDX.
Yes, Chair McEwen and Representative Gorsuch. The Lufthansa service worked well. The issue that we have at in Portland is the seasonality of the service. Oh. So the summer, it's difficult to get a seat. In the winter, it's a challenge. And so for an airline who has airplanes that are movable, right. Airports are not. Airplanes are. And so they're trying to maximize their returns on those. And so we would see the traffic decline. Delta, at the actually it was Northwest Airlines at the time, came to us and talked about the service to Amsterdam, which serves Nike's world headquarters quite nicely. Mm-hmm. And we realized we probably wouldn't get two nonstop services to sustain itself over the long haul. And at the end of the day, Lufthansa decided to depart. The Delta service now really works well with the Asia flight and how that pendulum really swings, and they're able to share aircraft. And so it works particularly well. We have been pushing to get additional service to Europe because in the summer, it's hard to get a seat on the plane. The traffic doubles to Europe in the summer, and that's what we've seen with Condor and Iceland Air, these market opportunities to provide these services. They are seasonal, so they are 2 days a week for Iceland, 3 days for Condor. I expect they'll be increasing those frequencies, and over the long haul, trying to make them extend over a longer period of time throughout the year.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Please continue.
Okay. That really is, I think, where we will see a lot of the growth at PDX is in the international routes, more and more business travel. And again, as I said, you're really seeing that out in the airline models as well. And so we're excited to have the new service that we've got. On the cargo side, cargo is up about 4%. And one of the things that we're actively pursuing is nonstop cargo service to Asia. And we have had various experiences with airlines. If you'll recall, we had Asiana here, and they departed a year ago. They were running the service out of Seattle as well. That service is really important to for the perishables. So we get blueberries, cherries, crab from Astoria that gets put on refrigerated containers and sent over in the seasonal work. And so that's the business that we're trying to generate. We also work with Nike closely on that because, as many of you probably know, the air soles are manufactured in Beaverton. They go air. There's a shelf life to those. They go air cargo over to Asia, put into the shoes, and then the shoes come back here on a much slower mode of transport. But so cargo is a very important area, and we're, again, pursuing the nonstop back to Asia. The biggest driver for PDX is passengers. It really all falls from there. And you can see over the history here of what's happened, you certainly saw the decline in 2001, and then certainly the decline. We lost about 11% of our growth due to the recession, and it's been a long, slow climb back out of that hole. But now it's basically a record every day, whether it's record for the summer, record, you name it. And yet again, I really do have to give credit to our TSA, who does a phenomenal job of processing those passengers and getting people moving through the building. So that's the story on PDX. We'll be spending somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 billion at PDX over the next decade or so. We have some terminal expansion projects. It's been a while since we've touched anything in the terminal building. And, of course, the new carpet will make it look much, much nicer. We're almost we're about two-thirds of the way through with replacing the carpet. Hillsborough is actually the busiest airport in the state, and a lot of that is corporate aviation, and much of that is flight training as well. And so you talk about the arrivals and departures, and that's actually been the busiest airport. We have four what we call fixed-based operators. They each serve their own special niche. It's actually a little unusual to have that many FBOs on the field, but it works well out there. Each of them does their own, whether it's maintenance or charters and so on. Corporate aircraft, Intel runs their air shuttle. They do 28 flights a day out of there between Chandler, Arizona, San Jose, and Olympia. So they're quite a large private airline that's really running. Hillsborough is viewed as a strategic asset to Intel, and so we obviously stay well connected with them. Nike and Columbia Sportswear have their corporate jets out there as well. We do have a customs space, a customs facility out there for international travel, so people don't have to fly into PDX, which makes it much more convenient for some of those global operators that are in Hillsborough. And Mitch talked a little bit about this, about pilot training. And one of the things that we're seeing with Hillsborough Air Academy, and they operate both at Hillsborough and aviation, is the pilot and flight training. And what you're finding is that many of those pilots are actually Asian pilots. And so there are large schools of them that are, so if you go out into Washington County, you will see lots of pilots riding their bikes down all through the community. And they are doing two things, learning English, which you have to have in order to fly, and learning to fly. And many of those are going back over to Asia. And so that's a lot of what the focus is for their flight schools.
Sir, can you give me a sense of how many people they would run through that program in a year? How many pilots would they finish off and graduate in a year?
Chair McEwen, I don't know that number. I'm not sure if anybody else might have that.
Ballpark's fine.
Chair McEwen, I'm reasonably certain it's in the hundreds. They fly about 70,000 hours a year, which is a phenomenal number for a flight school. When they move to an airport, like they've recently went to Prineville and Troutdale, they move the needle on the number of operations at that airport, so they'll drive it up to over 100,000 operations a year at Prineville and Troutdale just by the virtue of fact that they're there.
Right.
Do you have a sense of what it would cost someone to go through flight school from start to finish?
Chair McEwen, I don't have that.
I know that answer.
She's got that answer.
I'm Chair McEwen. I'm Captain Stevens.
Actually, are you? I may have you come up later. So
I can answer the question for you later.
Well, I'd need to have you come up and introduce yourself.
I'm sorry.
For the record.
Sure, for the record. I'm Catherine Stevens. I'm the Assistant Airport Director at the Eugene Airport, and I'm also here representing the Oregon Airport Management Association today. I'll be speaking a little bit later. I happen to know the answer to the question because my daughter is planning on going to flight school next year, so I can tell you that her fixed-wing program to get all the way to the point where you graduate is about $46,000. That's at University of North Dakota. She's going to tack on a helicopter as well, so that's another $20,000 on top of that. And that gets her to about the 250-hour mark, and she to be able to get a commercial pilot job coming out of that school specifically, she would need to make it up to 1,000 hours beyond that. So that's part of what's contributing to the pilot shortage is that gap. That's a new requirement. It used to be 250 hours. It went up to 1,500 hours after the Colgan air crash about 5 years ago. That was legislated by Congress. And Several schools around the country have been able to, because of their four-year program, reduce that number to 1,000, but that's still a huge gap for students to make up.
Wow, thank you. Thank you so much for that information. It's fascinating. Mom knows.
I did want to comment on the Hillsboro Third Runway, and this opened after at least a decade's worth of work to try to get this up and running. It's very challenging to open additional runways, but we did this about 3 weeks ago that the runway opened. We had an administrator out from the FAA who said, I've been to four runway openings, Atlanta, Chicago, I believe there was one in New York, and Hillsboro. So it's truly unusual to get additional runways built, and this one took some time, and we certainly appreciate the Connect Oregon funding and the patience that was allowed while we went through that process to get that constructed. This runway, it's not a long one, so 3,600 feet, but a lot of this will be taking the flight training and the helicopter training and moving it over there, so we've got the main runway and leaving that available for the corporate jets and the business traffic. And then lastly is Troutdale. There is an air traffic control tower. It's a contract tower, which has seen some challenging funding through the FAA, but we've been successful in retaining that. We're about 100,000 operations at Troutdale, and a lot of it has been driven because Hillsboro Air Academy has moved their operations out to Troutdale. So it's third busiest airport in the state. And again, there are jobs, tax revenues that gets created out there as well. But a different mission, less corporate and much more of just flight training and more recreational. It's challenged by its location at the foot of the gorge, the mountains and so on that are in the area. We're in the middle of a master plan right now. Every airport's required to do a master plan over certain periods of time. It's been 10 years since we've done the Troutdale one. And so for us, we are participating with all of the community out there, the FAA, the pilots, the businesses, and the other regional and local governments about what is the future of the Troutdale Airport. And there's certainly a lot of land and industrial development going on around Troutdale. How do those coexist? What is the priority? And certainly for the port as a consolidated port who's doing, we have multiple missions. We have industrial development. We have ports in the marine side and the aviation side. So we are working through that with the group right now. Our plan is we'll be done with that in the spring of 16. So we had our fourth or fifth meeting just last week, and that will continue on here for the next year to figure out the role of that airport in the long term. So,
Vice Chair Gorsuch, I thought you might have a question.
Yeah, Troutdale's in my district. It's actually the community I live in. First thing, there are some rumors that float around the community about possibly Port of Portland wanting to close Troutdale. What do you think are the prospects for that?
So, Chair McEwen and Representative Gorsuch, in the last meeting that we had, we laid out alternatives, and we gave a spectrum of a complete closure of the airport to an enhanced, longer build-out, longer runway, and full business corporate aviation. And that, in our minds, is the spectrum upon which the community needs to decide what the future of that airport is. Okay. Certainly there are challenges to closing airports. There are challenges and physical challenges to further development of that airport. We really want to seek input from the community about what are the alternatives. As you know, there's a lot of development around there. And there are jobs. And certainly if you look at the FedEx facility and the amount of jobs that have been created out there, that's one play for economic development. There's an economic development related to aviation as well.
Right.
And so how do they coexist? Are there ones that are more valuable than others? It's certainly not going to happen here anytime in the short term whatsoever. This would be a long process. And that's the point of the master plan, is to figure out where do we see that the role of that airport in the long term.
Okay. Follow up. Yes. Mm-hmm. You were right, too, about the tower issues that we faced certainly last year. Long term, does it look like that's fairly stable now?
Chair McHugh and Representative Gorsuch, as stable as it can be with the federal government when it comes to funding.
Right.
And Mitch, you might have a little bit more on this. At this point, everything looks pretty good within the FAA reauthorization and the funding of how that's going to go. But obviously, those things are tenuous. And I don't know, Mitch, if you've got anything beyond that.
Chair McEwen, Vice Chair Gorsuch, the current reauthorization bill, which is being legislated right now at the federal level, has it funded at about $6 or $7 million more than the previous year where it was fully funded.
Right.
So I think the program is safe for now. There's so much congressional opposition to killing the contract tower program, and it's been so successful that I think the FAA would have a hard time reducing it in the near term.
One more?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Definitely Hillsboro has an operation now at Troutdale, and I see the Chinese pilots all the time. They actually live in an apartment complex just up the street from the airfield. You see them walking back and forth all the time, like you were talking about with the bicycles.
Right.
The one thing that's very unique about Troutdale, though, is that it sits underneath PDX airspace, and so that's why I was asking about the tower, because we know, especially with the training and then, you know, the big jets and then all of the private planes, it makes for a really unique sort of space in terms of all of those different pieces fitting together properly, especially with the big jets right overhead.
Yes. Chair McEwen, Representative Gorsuch, that's why the port was very strong advocates for the tower funding. Without a tower there, you would have had to have control, positive control through PDX, and there could have been times where you would have had a ground stop at PDX while we're trying to locate a pilot who didn't complete their flight plan before you would let anybody go. That's probably not an efficient way to run a system. So we were strong advocates and would continue to be strong advocates for the tower at Troutdale.
And it's actually quite amazing when you think about everything that's going on there. That it, I mean, we have not had any major problems there. It's a credit to PDX, well, Port of Portland, that it's functioned as smoothly as it has. So, thank you.
Sure. Representative McLean.
Thank you. I live out in West Washington County, and my district takes in part of Hillsboro and Cornelius and Forest Grove, and I get a lot of emails about the Hillsboro Airport, and I've been involved in some ways. You started an advisory program out there many, many years ago when I was serving on Metro, and I was actually on your very first committee when you were looking at your third runway. And so I have a little bit of a background, but I still need help. That group, I think, is still going, and I evidently have somebody who sits on that group that represents me. And so I was told that, and so I found out his name, and I called him. And I haven't really heard too much more about those meetings. So maybe you could get in touch with the group and see if I could get on their mailing list.
Okay.
Because the kinds of emails that I get are, of course, about noise and air shows and the third runway and a lot of the kinds of things that citizens want to have someone to respond to their issues or at least listen to their issues. And so I could be a much more, I guess I would say, effective or efficient person to help represent some of these issues if I just had a little bit more interaction, contact, and sort of a connection. So that would help. There's a lot of good things happening out there, and I have family who helps with the air show, and we've gotten a lot of results from the air show with, you know, funds coming through Hillsboro to the schools and a lot of good things. And the jobs and everything else that you mentioned are fabulous. But as you know, with these kinds of facilities, we really need to be really in tune with the community that hosts those facilities. And so I can do a better job if I can have a closer connection.
Chair McEwen and Representative McLean, we'd be happy to do that. We would love any assistance that we can get, and we'll make sure that you're aware. Those meetings do continue, the Hillsboro Airport Issues Roundtable, and so they occur on about a quarterly basis, and we talk all things Hillsboro, air quality, noise, the air show, which you'll have the Blue Angels this year, by the way, so that's always a big draw. So we would be happy to make sure you get all of that information.
And the last thing I wanted to say was was that we've hosted a national conference in Portland through an organization that I work with, which is the National Speech and Debate Association, which brings in 5,000 people for a competition for high school students. And we held it in Portland in the year 2000. And we still, because not just of the airport quality in Portland, but that was one of the three main things when we did a survey at the end of our large conference and asked them what did they like about the Portland competition. And one of the top three was the Portland Airport. So I just wanted to share that with you. Thank you.
Obviously, this is a topic we find interesting. I'm getting a little concerned about our timeline here. So, Mr. Tremaine, we'd love to learn a little bit more about in situ. I've actually seen a couple of presentations by your organization, and it's fascinating. So we're delighted that you're here.
Good job. Thanks. Chair McCune and committee, thank you very much for having me today. It's my honor to represent industry, but as well to be here in the Capitol. Having grown up in Salem, it's been since I was a teen since I was back in the Capitol again.
Welcome back to your Capitol.
Thank you very much. So I work for Institute, and one moment here.
Nathan can help.
Thank you. So today I'll give you a company overview. We'll talk about our products and services and a discussion about how we feel that we affect Oregon and the things that we're doing within the state. Institute came onto the unmanned aviation map in 1998 when we conducted the first autonomous crossing of the Atlantic. After 1998, we had a few technology upgrades, and in 2004 is when the company really came to fruition when we had a contract with the United States Marine Corps during Desert Storm 1. In 2005, we deployed our first deployment with the United States Navy. If some of you have seen the movie Captain Phillips, we were actually the ones who found Captain Phillips when the Somali pirates had captured Captain Phillips and directed the ship that we were deployed on, the USS Bainbridge, over to take custody of the pirates and save the captain. In 2006, we deployed with the Australian Defense Force. We also have an office in Australia right now, Institute Pacific, that has been very good for us, both in Australia and in our Asian market. In 2007, we started a program for our new aircraft called Integrator. And in 2008, we were acquired by Boeing. We're the only wholly owned subsidiary within the Boeing portfolio, which has worked very, very well for us when we've made that jump from a small business to a larger business. It's been quite advantageous to us, and they've been a great big brother, so to speak. In 2009, we hit 200,000 hours, and in 2014, we deployed Blackjack, which is now the government name for Integrator. Out of our two aircraft, we have Blackjack and Scan Eagle. And we are currently deployed with the United States Marine Corps in Afghanistan with Blackjack. Here's a quick snapshot of some of our customer base. You could also add Lithuania, Romania, and most recently the Czech Republic to our portfolio. We have 815,000 hours listed on the slide. We're actually pushing right about 1 million hours right now. At Institute, we have two aircraft, Scan Eagle, Integrator, ICOM C2, which is one of our software packages. We conduct training, field operations, which is the large consortium of our business, and then we have a large payloads directorate, which means that we have many different payloads that we can integrate onto our aircraft. We pride ourselves as being a company that can, we call it plug and play. You bring a payload to us, and in a very short time, we're able to integrate it into our aircraft. Scan Eagle is our flagship. In this picture, we have an MWIR 2 and an EO 900 cameras. In this picture, aircraft is about 45 pounds and can fly up to 24 hours on just less than a gallon of gas.
Wow.
Could you go back?
That's awesome.
I'm looking at the scale. I was trying to get a sense of what size this actually is, and that gentleman holding it really gives us a picture of how big they are. They're not very big.
Not at all.
It's an amazing amount of technology for something that...
Roughly a 10-foot wingspan and about 45 pounds.
How high can these fly?
So our ceiling is roughly 18,000 feet.
Okay.
So this is a picture of our commercial version is called Integrator. Our military version is called Blackjack, and it's the big brother to Scan Eagle. It has a payload capacity of 80 pounds and weighs just under 140 pounds. So the company as a whole, as you can see on this map, we call the Gorge our home. We employ just about 1,200 people right now. With that, 400 people live in the White Salmon Bingen area on the Washington side of the river, and about 250 people in Hood River, and a few folks that live out in the Dallas and in the Portland area as well. I think it's important to point out that most of the folks who work or live on the Washington side spend most of their dollars on the Oregon side, because the major towns are on the Oregon side of the river, so many of their dollars are brought on our side here.
There might be another reason, too.
So a quick snapshot of our Oregon statistics. For up to 2014, as you can see, there's a breakdown of the counties of how we have our money has been spent. And for Washington's, we've listed Klickitat and Skamania County, and as previously stated, the major towns are on our side of the river, so most of those dollars come back to the Oregon side.
Do you mind backing up one more time? Josephine County. What's going on in Josephine County?
So in Josephine County, we have a couple of suppliers that live and work out of Josephine County who we patronize.
Well, that's a good thing. Thank you.
In Washington again?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's some of the challenges that we have living in the Gorge. Although we absolutely love the Gorge, being a larger business growing up in the Gorge, now there are certain infrastructures that are becoming a challenge for us. There's a lack of homes in the area. I would say also for the tourism industry, there's a lack of hotels, so they have a real challenge. People in the area find it easier to rent out their home to as a vacation rental as to someone who actually lives and works in that area. Employment opportunities for our spouses. You know, it is a small community, so with that, it's difficult for our spouses to find employment in the region. We find a lot of our folks who we bring in to work for the company, that is one of their major challenges, and they relocate in the Portland-Vancouver area because of spousal income. The bridges are one of our major challenges. The two bridges, one being in Hood River and the other in Cascade Locks at the Bridge of the Gods, have both become major challenges for us and for both states, I should say. They're aging bridges. They were built in, I believe, 1924, 1926. And with that, the upkeep has been quite difficult. Recent Hood River Bridge history, 1999, the Columbia River Crossing Feasibility Study was conducted. 2004, the full feasibility study was conducted, and a draft environmental impact statement was completed. In 2011, the MOU was created to recognize the date of the bridge and the parties that would work cooperatively and replace the Hood River Bridge. Oregon and Washington Department of Transportation did not sign this MOU. If we could ask one thing of you... As a committee, we would like you to really take a strong look at the bridges, not only for our business, but for the overall economic impact of the entire area.
So I can assure you that that issue doesn't go unnoticed in this committee. I believe we have in excess of 3,700 bridges that need attention. So these are part of a large problem that we know is out there and looming. And we're very interested in trying to seek remedy and find ways to deal with these issues. So it's not lost on us, I will tell you.
We very much appreciate that. I can tell you personally, having crossed the bridge many times a day, because we have offices on both sides of the bridge, it can be quite a challenge in the wintertime and in the summertime with traffic, and particularly when you have two converging semis, all traffic comes to a complete halt as they edge past each other due to the narrowest of the bridge.
Thank you. Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you know why Oregon and Washington DOTs did not sign on to that MOU?
Chair McEwen, Representative Gorsuch, I do not know why.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So this is a quick snapshot of where we see the UAS industry going in the near future. Over 4,000 different platforms currently exist. I view it personally as a lot like the dot-com community was a few years ago. You had many, many different companies out there, and in the end, there were a few that emerged. Right now, we are the leaders of the industry, and we feel that we that we'll maintain that leadership, and we'll be one of the strong companies to emerge out of the race. Total economic impact for the next 3 years is predicted to be $13.6 billion in worldwide forecast through 2025. Is $82.1 billion with 70,000 new jobs in the first 3 years of integration, and that falls right in line with what we are seeing with market trends right now. The industry is exploding.
Sir, I see a lot of military and law enforcement applications, but I'm also noticing agriculture, which is something I have an interest in. Also, at this point in time, our is private use of these drones available?
So, Chair McEwen, right now it is closely regulated by FAA, and rightfully so. We cannot fly over U.S. soil without special permissions in place. And with that said, the standard public, you know, Joe Public cannot go out and purchase a plane and enter into the FAA restricted airspace. The bridges that we're building right now with the FAA and the work that's being done, it's coming very, very soon. Within a matter of a few years, you'll see more UAS activity over U.S. soil. But as it stands right now, the general public cannot purchase a UAS and fly into the FAA-controlled airspace.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Did you have a question?
Oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure all of your items were on OLIS because I didn't get a chance to read all the material before the meeting. So thank you.
Good. Great. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. So we have a contract with a Central Oregon Community College, and I find this one very important because this is a school right here in our own state that is – currently, they have 200 students in their database. They're generating $4 million annually. And out of that $4 million, is going directly in. That's $4 million that's going directly into the local economy in that area. It's a school that's done great things there. I believe their numbers are 50% fixed wing, or I'm sorry, 40% fixed wing, 50% helicopter, and 10% UAS. I can tell you the growth that they're seeing right now is, in the UAS market is predicted to go up roughly 30%. So with that said, they have a large an academic portfolio that is coming from the outside the state. This is, I believe it's 80 or 85% of their students come from outside the state to make this program a strong program. Current work we're doing on the civil and commercial side with at in-situ this year, we'll be participating in Arctic Shield, which is it's a U.S. Coast Guard operation in the Northwest Passage to help protect national security and further U.S. interests in the Northwest Passage now that the ice has receded. We will also be conducting a demonstration, ongoing demonstrations with the Customs and Border Protection agencies. We conducted an operation with them this spring, and within the first day, we had four drug interdictions of folks coming across the border that we were able to assist with apprehension. We'll also be doing wildland firefighter support within Washington, and we could do the same in Oregon if a COA was to be pushed through in short order. We're increasing our operations with the University of North Dakota and increased operations with Central Oregon Community College. Earlier this spring, we conducted a short demonstration with the with the Forestry Service Department in Washington, and it's proven to be very, very strong weapon against forest fires, because we're able to fly at night, we're able to detect the hot spots at night, so they can react in the first thing in the at first light. Whereas the way operations are conducted today, they fly at first light, they take their intel, and they decide how they'll fight the fire. So we give them the opportunity to operate at first light, as opposed to a 2 to 4 hour delay. So in closing, Institute feels we believe strongly that the privacy rights of the U.S. citizen is most important, and we're doing all that we can, both on the FAA front and within local governments, to maintain the privacy of our U.S. citizens, and to be able to conduct flight operations for UAS and help UAS grow as a whole. Our unmanned aircraft systems increase human potential, and most notably in the safety aspect and in the saving of dollars as well. And I thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you so much. Questions?
That's great. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your good work in Oregon, and we're very happy to have you here. I'm intrigued by the firefighting application. Mm-hmm. Of course, this is something that, you know, we're facing a difficult firefighting season, and it just seems very practical to have you out there looking at night as opposed to morning. And what does it take to get that COA taken care of prior to this season starting to ramp up, which it will very, very soon?
So, Chair McKeown,
what are we missing?
We've had, it's been my experience that we have not had a lot of proactivity on the Oregon side of the river, whereas the Washington side has been very proactive on to establish COAs going forward.
Chair McKeown, I know that there are efforts ongoing right now in Oregon, and I don't want to speak for other state agencies, but I know working with the FAA is a little bit challenging and getting their authorization, but I do know that there are efforts right now in Oregon to establish certificates of authorization to be able to do that type of work.
Great, thank you. I have one other question. I mean, this is an emerging technology. You've come a long way in a very short period of time with this. At the federal level and at the state level with statutes and laws, how are we doing in keeping up with you?
Chair McKeown, I can say at the federal and state level, it's lagging behind. As you mentioned, the technology is growing so fast, it's hard for government agencies to keep up with the growth. We have folks who actually sit at the FAA headquarters and are helping to write the rules and regulations, but it is a very slow process.
Thank you. I hope we can at least attempt to keep up. Any other questions? Great. Thank you, gentlemen.
Hey, Madam Chair.
Yes, Vice Chair Davis.
Can we briefly do the work sessions?
Yeah, we can. What I'd like to do, in deference to Vice Chair Davis, who has a timing issue, I'm going to go ahead and open these two work sessions and move them through very quickly, if you don't mind. Is that all right with the rest of the committee? So he can be on his way, and then we'll continue on with the panel. So I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 472A and look to Mr. Brennan to tell us what we're moving here today.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 472A increases from 40,000 to 80,000, sets the number of Pacific Wonderland vehicle registration plates. There's no amendment to the bill. It has minimal fiscal, no revenue. Or I'm sorry, there is a revenue statement that was issued on the bill as it came out of the Senate, Madam Chair. We haven't gotten a new revenue statement. The bill went through the Senate 30-0.
All right. Vice Chair Gorsuch?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 472A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Gorsuch moves Senate Bill 472 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Comments, questions? Take the roll, please.
Representative
Payne? Aye.
Representative Hack?
Aye.
Representative Lively?
Aye.
Vice Chair Davis?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gorsuch?
Yes.
Chair McKeown?
Aye. Representative Benz is excused. The motion passes. Do we have someone like to carry this bill?
I'll carry it.
Vice Chair Gorsuch will carry.
And I'll note, Huffman, I think, is now chair of the Capital Foundation, too.
Yeah.
He may want it. Make a few comments.
Yeah, so if he wants
Mr.
to take
would
it,
would you
that's
ask
fine
if he'd like to carry or co-carry?
I don't know how much he who's interested. But
well, I mean, John is, he's trouble, but I think we can work it out. I think we can.
Mr. Brennan can investigate
that. Okay, and then if he doesn't want to, I will.
That sounds great.
Or co-carry, whatever.
Close the work session on Senate Bill 472A, open a work session on Senate Bill 943. Mr. Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 943 prohibits counties and districts from imposing a vehicle registration fee on vehicles registered to an employment address as opposed to the registered owner's residential address. This bill was heard last Friday when I wasn't here, but I understand it went swimmingly.
Briefly and
Senate,
swimmingly.
Senate vote 20-0, minimal fiscal, minimal revenue, no amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Brennan. Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 943 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Gorsuch recommends that we move Senate Bill 943 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Seeing no concerns, Nathan, will you take the roll, please?
Representative Pack?
Aye.
Representative Miley?
Aye.
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Vice Chair Davis?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gorsuch?
Yes.
Chair McKeown?
Aye. With Representative Bentz excused, the Senate Bill 943 passes. Is there someone who would like to carry this bill?
Okay.
Representative Lively will carry. Thank you. Closing the work session on Senate Bill 943. And now I will go back to our informational hearing and call Catherine Stevens, Mary Rosenblum, and Jake Jacobs, please. Welcome to our committee. Thank you for being here this afternoon.
Chair McKeown and representatives of the committee, thank you so much for hearing us today. I am the Assistant Airport Director at the Eugene Airport, as I mentioned earlier. I'm here to represent the Oregon Airport Management Association today, and I have, of course, the third hat, which is the mom of the daughter who's going to be a
very
pilot.
Important hat to wear.
So a little bit about the airport, Oregon Airport Management Association. Here's our mission up on the board. Our mission is the management, Oregon Airport Management Association is to provide leadership, direction, and education on aviation issues in the state of Oregon. So this is kind of a lot of text up here, but I just wanted to give you an overview of the types of things that we take a look at. And so some of what we do, we study and we take action on all matters involving the welfare of citizens of the state of Oregon, which are of concern to or the responsibility of airport management and of those in the aviation field. We also put a high level of care on public safety and the welfare of those who are part of the aviation system in our state. And we promote the recognition and importance of airport management's responsibility in making sure that we have the value and benefits of adequate aviation facilities. So helping municipalities to evaluate, establish, monitor, and improve their aviation efforts. We also encourage the employment of highly qualified, equitably compensated airport and aviation professionals. We also develop and recommend and promote uniform regulations and legislation pertaining to airports and aviation facilities. And we review and research all proposed aviation legislation to propose amendments when deemed appropriate. Along with that, we operate in harmony with and promote the purposes and objectives of other aviation-oriented activities and professionals, and we advance the professional skills of all of those in the administration and development of the aviation field. So our membership is pretty broad. We have members that are part of air carrier airports, general aviation airports, affiliate members, otherwise known as consultants, some academic members, and honorary members, which would generally be retired folks from the industry that still have an interest in being involved.
So could you give me a sense of how many members you have?
Yes, we currently have about 80 members. It's pretty spread out from airport management across the state and the different airports, and then also pretty strong representation from consulting firms that we all rely upon, and some academic interests, and also some private aviation interests as well. So. We meet a couple of times a year. Our fall conference moves around the state based on where the president of the organization is located. Our spring conference is with the Oregon Department of Aviation, and it's always held in Salem in conjunction with a legislative session. We find that to be a very cohesive group when we get together and have our conference. We also try to have periodic, either tri-state or bi-state conferences. It used to be with Oregon, Washington, Idaho. Idaho's on their own now, so it would be Oregon and Washington, generally because we find that we deal with the same FAA folks at our airport's district office, and so we're able to share some information back and forth between states. So our meetings, I think, are most valuable in the aspect of being able to network it with other people at airports and in other parts of the aviation industry. And that, at least for me personally, is really most valuable to be able to talk to people, kind of bounce ideas off of them. You know that when you go back to your own airport that you can call any of the other airport directors in the state and be able to find out how they've handled a situation or something like that. So at our conferences, we really focus a lot on regulatory updates, which are always changing. So we'll hear from the folks at the FAA and the TSA. Lately, we've been talking a lot with the folks from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for some of our endangered species issues that we have on our airfields. We'll get an update on Connect Oregon and also talk about land use planning if there have been any changes in that realm. And also do some pretty in-depth info share about how to maximize our revenues and minimize costs, which kind of generate some ideas and share from the other airports across the state. So some of this has already been covered, but it's on my slide, so I'll talk with you about it as well. So these are the NIPIUS airports that you see here. So there are 57 in the state. Make sure I'm giving you my right numbers here. And those are the ones that are just recognized on the NIPIUS. So there are many more airports across the state that are also public use airports as well. And there you kind of see the breakdown. So the largest chunk being the municipalities and then state-owned airports, so the ODA there at 28%. Private airports, port authorities, county airports as well, just different types of structures of how these airports are managed.
And what is that red sliver? I'm having trouble reading
it. That is U.S. Forest Service.
Oh, okay. Yes. Thank you. I couldn't see the letters.
So we've talked about this a little bit, but we should talk about kind of the 10,000-foot level of why should we all support public airports? And there are a whole multitude of reasons. The obvious one is if you want to get from point A to point B and you want to fly there, it's part of the multimodal transportation system that we all enjoy. So from the largest airport in the state, PDX, down to the very smallest commercial airports, and then beyond that to the smallest GA airports. But there's also a lot of business and economic impact that comes from all of these airports and the activities that are involved in them. So statewide access across the state. Tourism, of course, is a big one. We've seen our tourism industry in the state really blossom over the past few years. And so I think that's being enjoyed all across the state. We know that we've seen those numbers of passengers coming in from outside of our area. Agricultural uses, also very important use for agriculture. Our government agencies rely heavily on aviation applications and their work. Emergency services, as you were just talking about the fire season this year. Last year at my airport, we had a couple of super scoopers that were stationed at our airport for a couple of months, and they were tackling forest fires in the region. It's really important that we have these airports all across the state where they have access to not only runways, but also access to waterways, where that's what they do. They super scoop, so they'll fly low, and it's pretty amazing. They showed us the equipment, and just how they operate those is pretty amazing. So, and very, very important. So recreation, of course, is another one. Pretty obvious. You know, there are a lot of folks, even with the expense of flying, that people still, if you have the bug, you know, you really enjoy it. I know Mary does. Yeah. And then the obvious one that I didn't put on the slide is education, obviously. So there are great flight schools within our own state, and then there are others as well that are connected to four-year universities, which is what my daughter chose to go to. So overall, this is the Oregon Aviation Plan's stat, which is $9.1 billion is the estimated economic impact of the airports across our state. So that includes on-airport revenue, so aviation-related impacts. It includes off-airport, so visitor spending, that kind of thing, and then some spin-off effects, so the suppliers and the respending of that same dollar over and over. So it's quite a big chunk, and this is just the impact from the nippiest airports, because that's the easiest thing to be able to quantify. But if you think about the other 97 total airports, public use airports in our state, and they're all contributing in some way to our economy as well.
All right, thank you. Questions for Ms. Stevens?
Thank you.
Vice Chair Gorsuch?
Just a comment. back to Troutdale. There's a theme here. Troutdale also has a permanent tanker base. So we see them flying a lot during the summertime because they land there, they can get new water supplies, and then take back off. So that's another aspect of that particular airport, like some of the others you were talking about.
Yeah, Representative Gorsuch, very much so. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. Ms. Rosenblum, welcome back.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Nice to be here again.
Yeah, thank you.
By the way, who took that picture? Do you know?
This one?
Yeah. It's an awesome picture. Okay. Sorry.
All right, so I'm the general aviation aspect of this, and of course, I'm going to overlap a little bit with what Catherine
Mary,
just
your
said.
Your name for the record, please.
I'm sorry. That's fine. Mary Rosenblum. I'm the president of Oregon Pilots Association, and an instrument-rated pilot who also lives on a private airstrip. I'm one of 24 people who share that. So, Chair McEwen and members of the committee, to start over again, I am. I'm going to talk about the general aviation aspect of this, which is going to overlap a lot on what Catherine just got done talking about, because airports and pilots are sort of one and the same. So general aviation is a complex group, and it's way too often it's oversimplified. And this picture is an ideal representation. What we have here is an old Stinson. It's a very small tail dragger airplane built in, I think, this one maybe the 30s or 40s. And we have a Gulfstream. And this is the gamut of general aviation from, and actually I should have included a balloon and a glider in this.
Maybe a drone. I don't know.
Yeah, the drones too, for that matter. So in general aviation, and I am not including commercial airlines at all, we're looking at $3.02 billion contributed to the Oregon economy in 2014. And we have quite a few pilots. We have quite a few aircraft. 4,450 and 2,450 with active medicals. But more than that, we are part of a highway in the air system, and we bring in a lot of aircraft and a lot of people from other areas, from out of state. And general aviation as a group does many things. It's easy to oversimplify it as a few rich people with fancy toys and who fly around and have fun, and that's one small part of it. And actually, that used to be a very large part of general aviation post-World War II into through the 70s, perhaps. You had a lot of the pilots who were flying for the recreation for the $100 hamburger. And it's changing dramatically. More and more general aviation today is business. And that's where we're really seeing the growth. Recreation is still part of it. When this is the Arlington Air Show up in Washington, we have people who come here to many of these. You camp, people who fly out to small backcountry strips and go into some of the areas where you have to horsepack or fly in, and may spend $1,000 on a lodge and food and meals and what have you. They're a significant addition to the economy. Business is the big one. This is the growing part of GA, and this is what's really replacing the recreational pilots. And we're looking at more and more of these very small business craft, either turbocharged or light jets. Honda has just gotten into it. They're bringing out the Honda jet. And this is the biggest growing part of aircraft sales. The reason for this is because you have companies who find resources that they want in rural areas where they have a rural tax base. If you look at Facebook and Apple out near Prineville and the Van Redmond area, and they need rapid connections to major air hubs or major urban hubs. And so light business aircraft has become a major part of the migration of business out into rural areas. Provides a huge economic boost to small communities. Sisters Airport, for example, when they improved their airport, they brought in two new businesses now, 65 living wage jobs moved into Sisters. That's a big chunk of the tax base. Mm-hmm. Flight training, as you've heard, this is actually, Boeing is reporting that we're going to need 533,000 pilots in the next 20 years. Now, that's the worldwide figure, but the U.S. figure is like close to 50% of that. And as you've been hearing, a lot of the world's pilots are training in the United States because we have the best general aviation system in airports anywhere in the world. And this is a huge economic boost. If you've ever gone near Troutdale or Hillsboro or Prineville, where the Hillsboro Flight School has moved, you will see hordes of people who fly in here, they live here, they buy food here, they recreation. And what I understand ballpark is, I think Representative Gorsuch, you asked earlier, is that for a foreign student to come in here and complete up through their being able to go home and fly jets is about $100,000.
Really?
That's what I understand. Now, that's a ballpark figure, and I don't have the source for that, but I could certainly get you the numbers for you if you'd like them.
Yes, please.
And that comes in directly to our economy. It's also technicians, people who maintain jets, maintain our rotorcraft, our helicopters.
True.
We have several good community college programs that do this. Firefighting, as you've heard, these are huge. Having access to tanker craft, you can come in and dump fire retardant or water, is critical. Right now we have Crescent Lake Airport, where their runway has buckled and is not repairable, and they are on the phone all the time. Mm-hmm. I know to the Department of Aviation, I've heard from them as well, because they want the fire support, and they can't get fire support if they don't have a runway to land at.
Wow.
Emergency services. If you live out in the middle of Eastern Oregon and you have a broken hip, it is a very long, bumpy ambulance ride to Klamath Falls. And it is a 15-minute life flight ride. And emergency services are, they play a big role for this. Also, in terms of search and rescue for people, of course, you hear about the hikers, you know, or people get stuck up on the mountain. But they play, in many of the rural areas, they are part of their ambulance service. They have a life flight fire med connection. I did not bring in an agricultural slide. I missed that somehow. But agriculture is still a big part of the industry. It is an area that the UAS technology is moving
Thank
into.
You.
Let's be politically correct here. but we're still doing an awful lot of crop dusting and an awful lot of survey and wildlife survey with small planes, so fire survey.
We've also had comments in Ag and Natural Resources about the importance of that technology and in crop observation and how water is used, and there's just it's
critical.
A whole new world.
It's critical in
it
the
is.
Water use. Now they're using
the timber
technology
industry,
to overfly and
ranching
look at soil,
farming, yeah.
Moisture, cattle you know, location and herding and rangeland monitoring. A lot of applications. Disaster relief is something that gets overlooked. This is a C-130. This was landing at the Watsonville Airport after the Loma Prieta earthquake in 89. Mm-hmm. And they've been used extensively in Haiti and also Katrina. The thing is that when you have a major disaster, you're not going to get anywhere on the highways very fast. And aircraft really provide a link for bringing in major services and major amounts of equipment to an area, and also staging out. In the Loma Prieta, this was one food bank in Watsonville that was 1,000 private pilots flew 500,000 pounds in to areas where you couldn't get a C-130. The runways were too small. They were flying into small strips and small airports. It's something that gets overlooked, but it's something that aircraft does remarkably well. As we get more and more concerned about our 9 earthquake off the coast, the only thing you're going to get out there afterwards is helicopters. You aren't going to get any cars over there. So really and truly what we're looking at is a highway in the air that has many, many facets. It's a way to connect rural Oregon with our urban hubs and our major airlines. It creates jobs. We bring in Madras, Sisters, Prineville, bringing in jobs with every new business that chooses to locate there. It brings in recreational dollars from people who fly in from out of state or just out of area within the state, emergency and medical services, and disaster relief, and firefighting, and agriculture. So, this is the part of GA that's so overlooked, is it is so complex, and it encompasses so many facets of our lives.
Kim, I have a friend that lives in Independence, mm-hmm. in the air park.
Oh, yes.
He's a commercial pilot and flies out of Seattle, so he just bumps up and pops on his...
Right.
Yeah, how prevalent is that becoming? Is that a growing phenomenon, or do we have what we have?
It does seem to be a growing phenomenon. There was, of course, a big downturn with the recession. Mm-hmm. But where I live, for example, which is Dietz Air Park, there's 24 families that share the expenses of a very nice grass 2,600-foot runway. Now the people who are moving out of there, they're finding that there's a waiting list for houses to get in there.
Interesting.
There is more of an interest.
All right,
and these do tend to be recreational, and we do have quite a few of the airline pilots mm-hmm. and who live here. I don't think any of them were commuting up to PDX by plane, but from Independence it would make sense.
Yeah, he just goes to Seattle. Yeah, thank you.
Oh, to Seattle especially.
He flies out of Seattle, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions?
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Last but not least, thank you for your patience, sir.
My pleasure.
Third to the bottom there in that.
Thank you. Chairman McEwen, Vice Chair Gorsuch, members of the committee, my name is Jake Jacobs, and I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Aviation Industries, better known as ARAVI. We're a startup enterprise. As you probably know, the Oregon Business Council a few years ago bought into the philosophy of Professor Michael Porter of Harvard, who said, clusters, when they come together, birds of a feather flock together. We've seen that in Oregon with high tech, with agriculture, with apparel, and in Hood River with unmanned aerial vehicles, also called drones. So there's a phenomenon when you bring people together in like industries and the supply chain builds around them, you can have a powerful economic development aspect. And so the Oregon Business Council a few years ago said, let's form clusters. So we do. We have a high-tech cluster, a food processing cluster, an apparel cluster, and finally an aviation cluster. So about a year and a half ago, we got really serious and said, okay, let's form a board of directors. I came off the board to become the part-time executive director to try to get this going. And one of the reasons this can be so important in Oregon is there are more than 400, excuse me.
It's okay. Please continue.
There are more than 400 aviation-related businesses across the state. Many of them clustered at airports, many of them in rural communities. Yeah. Look at all of the aviation businesses around Bend, around Aurora, around Troutdale, around Hillsboro. It's phenomenal. And we have an economic development focus on the businesses that create parts, that create airplanes, that create the supply chain that enables aviation. So it's an economic development focus toward the aviation sector of our businesses across the state. In the last year and a half, we have 80 paid membership companies that we're pretty proud of that have joined. And we're supported by memberships and by a couple sponsors. Mm-hmm. And we're moving forward looking for 100 companies to join by the end of the year. 19-member board of professional people, a lot of them aviation-related, and we're, of course, nonprofit. These are some of the members that we have within our group. Just to show you a couple, we have Garmin Aviation here in Salem, an active member, Aurora Aviation in Aurora, Emery Riddle at the Portland International Airport, which is a worldwide training center with a branch there. Synergy Air in Eugene that builds the RB-12s for Vans Aircraft as a finished product. In situ, VDOS Global, who is based in Corvallis, who operates drones in the Gulf of Mexico doing exploration monitoring of the sites using cameras. Electro, based in Warrenton, Oregon at the Astoria Airport, sells electrical-based tugs, aircraft tugs, for small aircraft up to airliners worldwide. Been around since 1945. Started with golf carts. Moved up. So those are some of them. We have, as I said, 83 actually as of today. Most of these you've seen before. We have the 97 public use airports, 350 privately owned airports. Now, a privately owned airport would be like Sisters or Lenhart's. And Sisters is a significant airport that recently got some Connect Oregon money, expanded the runway facilities and the asphalt. And a company who came in and bought them privately has grown to 65 full-time employees. Their company takes methane gas from old landfills and converts it into fuel for diesel engines. So it's a phenomenal green type of industry. That airport also serves a lot of tourists who come into Sisters on a regular basis. And last year, over the last 2 years, they reached out to the city and became annexed by the city, so the city loves them for the tax base and the community loves them for a portal to the rest of the world. As you've heard, 57 of the airports, we can get federal funding, so that helps a lot. Sometimes the federal funding will give us the grant match for the Connect Oregon. And when I was in Baker City for 8 years on the Airport Commission, we did just that, and we were able to get almost $3 million worth of money, most of it federal and some of it Connect Oregon, in order to make airport improvements for infrastructure. 28 state-owned airports. The rest are owned by cities, municipalities, and private folks. 12,000 jobs in 78 towns, $62,395 average wage. So it's a high-paying job after you've paid your $100,000 to become a pilot. If you look at all of aviation and the downstream effect, all the airports, the NIPIAS, the private, and so on, according to Mead and Hunt, the aviation consultant who gave us these numbers, $22 billion economic impact. Now, I've got three quick maps, and these are interesting. This is one I got from a ski site. The reason I want to show this one is when you think of aviation in Oregon, what do you think of? PDX, the big red airplane there. And that's it. If you live in other parts of the state, you might know, yeah, you can fly most anywhere out of Redmond. I flew to Seoul, South Korea from there once. Not direct. Eugene, Medford, Klamath Falls, who just lost their commercial service, and we're working to get that back. And then, as you know, Seaport Air flies down to Coos Bay, North Bend.
Been on it often. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Glad they're there.
They sure are. And that's, I think, a small community air service development grant.
Doing well.
And the Pendleton, which is an extended air service, federal grant of about $1.6 million a year.
And Coos Bay's expanding service to Denver soon, which is very, very welcome.
Seaport's a great company, and they have operations all around the country, most of them funded by federal money. But when you look at this map, you see eastern, southeastern Oregon is really unserved. And there are a lot of airports out there. When I was in Baker City, we wrote a grant to connect up to Pendleton, and it was a small community service airport grant for $500,000. We didn't get it because we didn't have the matching funds. They weren't required, but Mead and Hunt said if you don't have them, probably won't get it, no skin in the game. So we could envision, especially with Pendleton there, of having some type of shuttle service to bring Senator Farioli out of John Day, or maybe to take him back home to Baker City, Ontario, Burns. These people are unserved. We have this tremendous transportation system throughout the state. It's like having lots of freeways with no cars on them. We're not using our assets properly. And the poor folks over there in the east where I lived for 8 years are suffering as a result of that. The next map, which you can't read very well there, is what a pilot sees. And here's what one looks like. But on that map are more than 400 airports located all over the state that provide vibrancy for a lot of small communities. I'm a pilot with 2,800 hours instrument rated. I've been flying for 30 years. I belong to a group called Angel Flight, and we fly over 100 missions per year here in Oregon, bringing ambulatory patients to the larger cities for medical attention. And a lot of them are coming from small towns like Baker, where I've flown a little girl who's had a heart transplant twice. She went to Palo Alto, but we flew her to Klamath Falls. Another pilot picked her up in a much faster airplane and shot her down to Stanford. So we have freight services coming into these small airports, mail, and bank, and checks, the emergency services you've heard about. But they're a conduit for connecting our communities through Oregon that aren't used to the degree we'd like to see. So that's what we see from the air, is these 400-plus airports that we'd like to put into use, and we'd like to see businesses clustered around those small airports. There's even a little company in Joseph, Oregon, that builds wheels for Alaska bush planes.
I've been on a couple of those, too.
It's a great little airport. And you've seen this one already. Those are the federally funded airports that we focus on. So a couple more slides. One of the focuses our group has is on unmanned aerial systems. Unmanned aircraft systems, drones, UAVs, and under many other names. This is a dynamic industry that's going to grow fivefold in the next 5 years. It is a tremendous opportunity for Oregon. We have as members in situ in our group, VDOS Global, a company I mentioned in Corvallis. There are other companies in the area. There are about 100 companies related to unmanned aerial vehicles in Oregon. Honeycomb and Skyward are a couple of them. Skyward just received $4.5 million of equity funding. There are drone manufacturers, there are drone software companies, drone operations and resource companies. If you look at the Hood River and the Gorge area, you'll see companies that do carbon fiber, companies that do cable, and all of these suppliers to the drone industry that just made it vibrant there. And we can replicate that around the state. We have a group called the Association for Unmanned Aerial Vehicle Systems International. I'm on the board, as is Ron, who spoke earlier. And this group is focused on putting drones to use commercially and then civil activities throughout Oregon, primarily agriculture to begin with. Makes all the sense in the world. And to get that started, there's a group called SOAR Oregon, and we have test ranges in Tillamook, Warm Springs, and Pendleton, so that we can bring in companies from around the United States or internationally to do testing, because we're one of six test zones in the United States. If you build it, we will come type of thing. Pendleton just received about $1.6 million to help build out their UAS facility there. And the two gentlemen who were here earlier represent SOAR Oregon, the chief operating officer and the executive director. So this is an opportunity we really they need to grab a hold of, and Oregon has a tremendous potential. What we do as a group, and we're almost finished, these are the meetings we've had thus far to date, last year and earlier this year, in various members' facilities. We get together with about 40 of our members who travel to these locations. In Salem, we had workforce development panel with the governor's representative and five other people talking about workforce development at Garmin. In Eugene, Synergy Air talking about kit plane manufacturing. We're the world's leader in small kit plane manufacturers with Vans Aircraft in Aurora. Sisters, community relations, and airport funding. In Astoria, we talked about economic development. We had a lot of the economic development people there. Mm-hmm. And I'm also part-time Blue Mountain Community College Small Business Development Center person. And that plus my startup background, my aviation background, I can see doing the economic development aspect, taking my background and applying it to these small businesses. Hood River, we had our summit. Astoria, Electro, we had economic development, as I mentioned. Hood River, our annual summit, we had Senator Ted Ferrioli kicking it off and Senator Betsy Johnson closing it down. In Bend, we, in March, had aviation and UAS training at Central Oregon Community College, who's a member. And then next week, we'll be at Brim Aviation in Ashland to talk about their helicopter operations for utility and emergency use. And then Near Space Corporation, who's a member in Tillamook, they do high-altitude balloon testing up to 110,000 feet.
Fascinating. Just
isn't
fascinating.
That wonderful?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
For NASA.
Yes.
NASA contractors here in Oregon.
You have a remarkable depth and breadth here.
Nobody knows about these guys. We need to get
I do.
How high can you
it's
go?
It's remarkable. Yeah.
And they're also the test zone management company. And then in Aurora, we'll have our annual summit coming up in September. So, final slide is our role is aviation-related economic development. That means bringing the people together, getting the birds to flock together, finding resources with the quarterly meetings and the networking and the annual summits, newsletters, bringing information out to our members, working with the legislature to try to get support and communicate. And access to capital, we have Oregon Angel Fund actively involved in our meetings. We have Orca Capital as a major sponsor, and they're looking to invest in aviation-related companies, primarily the drone companies that are going to go like that, because they see tremendous opportunity. So finally, we want to maximize our air transport assets across the state, put these 400-plus airports to use, build businesses around them, and to have a positive economic development impact. And we're only a year and a half old, but we have 83 members, and we're flying higher. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I apologize. I have something that's time certain I have to step out to. I'm going to let Vice Chair Gorsuch wrap up and see if there are any questions. Thank you all for being here this afternoon. I appreciate it very, very much. And my apologies for having to
thank
step
you.
Away.
Any other questions for this panel?
Good information. It was great. Thank you so much.
Definitely. Any Representative Lytle?
No. It's obviously a huge impact. It's interesting to see it all. I mean, the number of airports, all the different activities and things going on is pretty fascinating. You don't think about that individually, but when you see it in a chart like that, it's pretty impressive.
And the one thing I would say is the emergency services. I've seen, when I worked in law enforcement, I've seen several occasions where Life Flight was used, and it's something that you do see within cities as well as the rural. We were out on a serious injury accident on the band field at about 45th, and a car had exploded. It had been rear-ended and exploded, and so this gentleman had been burned pretty badly and so needed to go as soon as possible to Emmanuel. And we stopped the freeway. Life Flight landed right on the freeway. They were down maybe 2 minutes, and then they were gone up in the air, and that guy was off to the burn center. So it's an amazing thing what aircraft, especially helicopters, can do in those sorts of situations. So, and sadly, I see them a lot. We live out, you know, next to the Sandy River, and so you see Life Flight going over quite frequently heading to the east. So, but it's good that it's there. So, anything else for the good of the order? Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, if there's anything else?
Mr. Chair, no meeting on Friday.
Okay.
And Memorial Day is Monday, so no meeting on Monday. So the next time we're here will be Wednesday.
Next Wednesday.
Okay.
All right. And in that case, then House Transportation is adjourned.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day, sir.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day, sir.